Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
I've got a question for you, Mark. Let's imagine that you bought a ticket to see some old favorite legendary name, goes back to the 70s and even the 60s. Let's just imagine it's all, I don't know, pluck a name at random, Jeff Beck. Okay. And you go along to see Jeff Beck.
Thin air. Yeah.
And presumably you get a bit of, I don't know, you probably get an old Yardbirds tune. You won't get Hi Ho Silver Lining, but you probably get something from, you might get something from Jeff Beck's seminal, let's use that adjective, seminal album, Truth.
And you want technique, don't you? You want precision.
Yeah, well, you're going to get that when you're going to get that when he goes into the tunes from Blow by Blow or Wired or any of his other early 70s hits. Okay, and let's say you're enjoying this feast of instrumental pyrotechnics and accuracy and precision and so forth. And then on lumbers
is the word.
Yeah. Some clown who looks as if he's won a kind of dress
Keith
like
Richards.
Keith Richards competition. He looks as if he's come second in trying to get the Nick Kent part in Pistol, of which more later. And proceeds to, there is no other word for it, but jam.
There'll be jam. Jam.
Yeah. And you are identified as Johnny Depp. Recently named somewhat blackened in the High Court in
highly controversial
in England, and then entirely exonerated in the courts of the United States. I do not know. I don't claim to know rights or wrongs.
Possibly fathom that one.
but all I want to know is, how do you feel?
I feel, surely, massively hacked off. Wouldn't you?
I mean,
genuinely cross.
Yes.
Because it's completely the antithesis of what Jeff Beck does. Jeff Beck's not, I mean, in principle, it's wrong anyway, but Jeff Beck isn't that kind of guy. It's precision, isn't it? Technique, it's kind of detail, and it's, you know, it's all terribly highly wrought, and it's virtuosity. Virtuosity is the key thing. Now, Johnny Depp, I mean, don't get me wrong. I clearly he can play a few major chords, but virtuosity, I think not.
No.
Johnny Depp's one of those guys. He formed a band called the Hollywood Vampires with Alice Cooper and Joe Perry, didn't he, a while ago, about 10 years ago. And you can imagine that's just a classic example of kind of rock star fantasy, isn't it? It's actors who fancy themselves on stage as a rock star, and all you do is buy a bottle of Jack Daniels and put a couple of fancy neck scarves on, and you're away, you know. But also, I think there's a problem that, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, would you be thrilled if Jeff Beck turned up in, you know, the next Pirates of the Caribbean?
No, not if given a difficult part. I don't think so.
No, but I think there's we have a slight problem with actors as musicians anyway, I think. I mean, I've seen bits of footage of Kevin Bacon's group, the Bacon Brothers, and they're actually pretty good. But your problem is, it's Kevin Bacon. You can't make that leap from the idea that it's Kevin Bacon sort of acting the part of a musician. You know, I speak as somebody who was at Glastonbury years ago and saw Dogstar, who are Keanu Reeves' band. Got a huge crowd, you know, early afternoon. Of course they did, because it's Keanu Reeves. And no matter how good or bad or indifferent they were, it just looked like Keanu Reeves playing the part of a kind of grunge bassist, throwing himself around the stage, all the right shapes, bit of backing vocal and all that. And you couldn't accept that he was somehow doing something different from just being Keanu Reeves. So I think we got a problem with that.
Can I introduce another element in that?
Yeah.
Because if I'm a Jeff Beck fan from, you know, where's he played? He's played in Newcastle, hasn't he? Played in Sheffield, I think, as well. You know, so if I'm a Jeff Beck fan living in either of those places, I presumably bought my ticket maybe pre-pandemic. It's perfectly possible, isn't it? I may have, bought the ticket ages ago, and, I've no doubt gone through a 2-year period during which, work acquaintances and neighbours have said, have you got anything to look forward to at the end of the pandemic? And you've said, yeah, I'm going to see
Jeff Beck.
And they have said, who? Who? You know, because Jeff Beck might be a household name to you and me. It's not to most people down my road, you know. Anyway, suddenly when you get to the thing, the whole... That whole pure experience of your kind of fandom has been hijacked by this person, you know, from the front pages. Suddenly, you know, coming on stage to, I don't know, it's good to rock wash his reputation. You know,
rock wash.
I think
that's very funny.
Well, this is what they call it. When a dodgy kind of Middle Eastern state buys a football club, you know, pick a name at random, Manchester City. You know, it's a means of sports washing their image on the world stage.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Johnny Depp is rock washing his reputation. By standing in the spotlight of
Jeff. You could imagine the winner in this, possibly, if there is a winner, is Jeff Beck. Because Jeff Beck, of course, has been in all the newspapers and all the media outlets. And would not normally have been so. Jeff Beck playing a gig in Newcastle is not big news.
It's not news.
But in every single international coverage of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard court case, what was Magic Alex's gag? He's got herd immunity. I know. And... they've all mentioned the fact that he's playing at Jeff Beck's concert. So in that respect, pretty good. But I think we have problems with it. I think we have problems also with rock stars the other way around, with rock stars as actors. I mean, how many times have you been convinced by a rock star on stage or on screen? Tom Waits?
Twice.
But Tom Waits, fine, because Tom Waits is playing
no,
Tom Waits.
No, I'll tell you.
I think only once in my case. Go on, who are yours?
Well, not quite a rock star. Well, okay, one a rock star, another a music star. Oddly enough, the two most convincing musical stars as actors or as screen presences were Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, Frank he was really good. Yeah.
And controversial mark, Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley.
Oh, you think so?
Yes, because Elvis Presley in front of a camera, you just wanted to look at him. He never looked out of his depth at all.
No, he didn't. Didn't look uneasy. He didn't look self-conscious. No, absolutely true.
No. Whereas, you know, David Bowie, appallingly self-conscious.
Roger Daltrey, I know, just a little bit agonizing. No, my the one I would suggest is Lady Gaga. You ever seen Born?
I have not. No.
Oh, my Lord, she's fantastic in that. Completely convincing. But no, Jeff Beck. And Johnny Depp, a bad thing. We've agreed.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
Before we go any further, however you're watching or listening to or in any way receiving this, any kind of feedback or subscription or ticking the box or thumbs up or whatever is deeply appreciated, isn't it, Mark?
We really
do appreciate, because it does make a difference, that kind of thing.
It does.
And so if you're watching this on YouTube or, you know, however, there's probably some way that you can demonstrate some kind of approbation by ticking something or whatever. If so, do it now while we wait.
It gives us a warm glow.
Oh, I'm feeling better already, Mark. I'm so
Thank you so much.
So pleased you did
that. That's made my day.
Okay, yeah. Right. So carry on. Back to the show.
Back to the show. I think we should mention, we must mention, actually, R.I.P., the great Ronnie Hawkins. A man that I remember Grail Marcus once described, he says he knew more back roads, more back rooms, more backsides than any man from Newark to Mexicali. And he's kind of the original, a really outrageous old kind of original road hog, wasn't he? And also connection with a kind of American kind of roots music. I mean, even when he was 50, he was born in 1935. So when he was 15, around 1950, he was playing in various bands, playing old Cab Calloway, jazz, blues. So he's that extraordinary connection back to America, but pre rock and roll. And yeah. Also, you know, as a teenager, running bootleg liquor from Missouri to Oklahoma in a Model A Ford for $300 a day. I mean, this is not the life of Radiohead, is it?
No, that's good money.
That's a lot of money, my God, that's a lot of money. I know. That's
whatever happened to those jobs?
Yeah.
Do you know what else? Because he came from Arkansas, didn't he?
And yeah,
he came from quite a comfortable background, really.
Yeah.
Because he went to university, which is not something that he went on about very much.
Funny enough, he didn't mention that, did he?
He didn't mention that. But he had an early... But you know what one of his early jobs was? He was... And this has to be unique in the whole rich history of popular music. He had an early job as a stunt diver in an Esther Williams pageant. Esther Williams being the big star, who was well-known star swimmer of Hollywood movies.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of water pageants.
Yeah.
And so the young Ronnie Hawkins, at the age of about 16, was presumably a really good swimmer. And no doubt, you know, plunged off high towers into buckets of water or something underneath. I was very taken with that. But he made his career, oddly enough, in Canada, didn't he, really?
Yeah, he did.
Because he just decided too much competition in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought
he was Canadian. And in fact, Levon Helm was from Arkansas as well, wasn't he? But
yes, he was, of course. Yes, that's the connection. Yeah, so he goes to Toronto and kind of starts again there, doesn't he? With I don't know if Levon had gone there first. I'm not sure.
But quite conventional things. He did early singles, "Summertime" and "Bluebirds Over the Mountain." It's always quite kind of traditional stuff, and then suddenly got into being a rock and roller, didn't he? And you can't help but think that there would have been no band's first and second album with that variety of American kind of roots music had they not worked with him and soaked up everything.
No, possibly.
Really extraordinary. Cause it's jazz.
So his first big hit single was 30 Days, the Chuck Berry song. Do you know what his second big hit single was?
Go on.
40 Days. Which is the same song, but basically, instead of singing, I'm going to give you 30 days to get back home. Its follow up says, I'm going to give you 40 days to get back home.
You got an extension.
Which talk about, you know, not wishing to, you know, everybody with a follow up always wants something that's like the hit.
Absolutely.
Well, that is
not trying to disguise it there.
Absolutely.
It's so great.
So he recruited the members of the band when they were kind of teenagers, didn't he? In the early 60s. And famously, as Robbie Robertson or somebody or one of them quotes on the soundtrack of during an interview in The Last Waltz, when he hired them, he said, "You won't get much money, but you will get more pussy than Frank Sinatra."
Which obviously worked for them. Yeah, Rick Danko, very happy.
It's a strong sales line with any bunch of kind of 18-year-olds in a band, you know.
Yeah.
And not used anything like as much as it ought to be, really.
I like the fact they always said he was so out of touch that he was just in this kind of bubble, wasn't he, where he was just the kind of music that he played was all he was interested in. And they said that they remember him listening to a Neil Young album, fellow Canadian, Well, not that he was Canadian, but we thought he was a Canadian. And how horrified he was by the sound of Neil Young. He said he was, and he just he couldn't understand what Neil Young was doing. The whole thing was kind of new to him and rather overpowering. And he became quite good mates with John Lennon at one point, although admitted that he'd never really sat down, never listened to a Beatles record. I mean, he just operated in a complete kind of in a complete kind of cocoon. Really interesting.
So now that Ronnie Hawkins is gone, how many of the original, let's say, the original rock and rollers are left? I'm going to tell you the answer, Mark.
Well, is Chuck Berry still with us? I can't remember.
No.
He's not, is he? No.
Chuck's been dead quite a few years.
Yeah.
There is only one. There is only one. And that is the one who, if there was any justice in this world,
it's not Jerry Lee Lewis.
Would have shuffled off this MC many years ago.
No.
It's Jerry Lee Lewis.
He's still with us.
He's somehow hanging on. My God.
How old would he be? I mean, that's phenomenal. He's not, I mean, does he ever play? No.
I don't think he does nowadays. No. But, you know, it's
That's outrageous, you know, isn't it? It's like the idea that, you know, the one who'll survive them all is going to be Keith Richards.
Yes.
You know, it's a sort of terrible irony, really, isn't it?
Yeah. If there were any justice, Jerry Lee would have left the building some while ago. But, you know, he's still there. So who are we to argue?
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
So in notes, Mark, in an announcement that has, as you can imagine, caused me great personal pain, that Kiss are handing in their lunch pail.
That's right. Handing in their mascara, their eyebrow pencils.
They are retiring at the end of their current stint.
Yeah.
Because they say they're doing it out of self-respect. It's quite interesting. And the love for their fans. And, you know, I may be a sarky old bastard. I think that's fair enough. Actually.
I think it's fair enough too, actually.
It's quite fair enough, you know. And they're obviously aware of the fact that, you know, getting around on stage is not quite as easy as it used to be. Not quite as limber as they would have been in their salad days. And, of course, they've had that inbuilt advantage for many years that they are behind a mask of makeup, and therefore you can't see the wear and tear, can you?
No, which is so normally it's a gradual process, isn't it? You know, we've talked about this before, that a lot of that equation when you go and see some group that you've loved for years is that initial moment when they come on, isn't it? And you have to weigh up whether or not you're going to accept what time has done to them, you know, and are you going to kind of believe it? And there are certain people, I think, where it became difficult. Peter Gabriel was one. I think Peter Gabriel looks so different. You know, Morrissey, I think, currently, not that he plays much now, is another one. You look at Morrissey, think, can I accept that is Morrissey? It just seems somehow different and somehow...
Yeah, middle-aged. Morrissey is an essentially thin concept.
Yeah, and it's essentially a young concept, and a middle-aged Morrissey doesn't seem quite right somehow.
He looks like Albert Finney nowadays.
Yes, he does. So you have to weigh that up. And so in that respect, it's interesting that you haven't seen them gradually age, and they've probably gone on much longer than they maybe could have done, actually. But I remember the disconcerting experience of going to see Nick Lowe playing with a group called the Lost Straitjackets.
Oh, yeah.
American instrumental group. They're amazing. And they play with masks, you know. And you get a sort of impression of what they are and what they sound like. And then we went to meet them all afterwards, and there they were without their masks, and that was really disconcerting, actually.
Really?
I don't know why. Just they were so much older just, and more different.
They're retired gentlemen, aren't they?
They're retired gentlemen. You just kind of had them as kind of ageless, and you know. So that's an odd experience. I suppose Slipknot could go on forever, couldn't they? Slipknot could go on forever and have new members, and you'd never know nor care.
No, you never know. One tangent on the Kiss story. I was reading a little interview with Gene Simmons, talking about how he stays fit and, you know, how it's important to stay fit. It takes it out of you, the kind of performing life. And he used an expression that it strikes me only Americans use, or say probably only Californian Americans use. They say he keeps fit by hiking 3 miles every day. Hiking. The Americans talk about hiking when they do what you or I would describe as, what's the word, Mark?
Walking. So he hikes to the shops. Does that mean he puts on kind of, knee-length socks? A pair of sturdy lace-up boots. I don't know. Probably has a cleft stick.
He's got a map.
And yeah, some crampons and pitons in case he has to abseil down the side of the coast.
He's got a piece of Kendall mint cake.
A compass.
In his backpack.
Bivouac.
For God's sake, Californians, pull yourself together.
It's hiking just walking.
Is a totally different thing.
It's just walking.
It's having a nice walk. And of course, I suppose it's a big thing in California because they've got rid of all the pavements, haven't they? That was the first thing that shocked me about Hollywood when I first went there, is you literally couldn't walk anywhere because there were no pavements.
You have to drive. There's no way around it.
Yeah, it's a society entirely made for affluent people. And so the only place where they go walking is they go out in the country. Hence, they use the expression hiking. Anyway, so that's KISS. They're retiring out of self-respect and love for their fans.
Maybe many other people should have done this as well at some stage.
So you've been getting into Pistol.
Well, I have. I've seen 5 episodes. I thought it was quite good, actually. I mean, you weren't that keen. We talked about it a bit last week. I mean, it is corny. It's unbelievably corny. And we talked about that whole thing that in biopics you have to introduce straight away who the characters are, because otherwise you might not know. Honestly, Dave, it gets more and more ludicrous. There's a bit where they play their first gig and somebody comes up, a journalist with a notebook, like a notepad.
Oh, the journalists always do that.
She says, Neil Spencer from the NME. Yeah, she says, hello.
No.
Yeah, she says, hello, Neil Spencer.
No.
So that kind of idea, the outstretched hand is the other bit. There's a bit where they're looking for a new record deal. They've been booted off EMI and booted off A&M. And they go to a houseboat on the canal in North London, and a man with a beard and a comfy sweater holds out his hand. He says, Branson, Richard Branson, to make it absolutely clear, you know. And it is so corny. It's an unbelievable scene when they play in a kind of posh hotel. And there's a girl who works in the hotel who's quite conventional, you know, and she's got all her kind of the hotel gear on, you know. And she's so overcome by the sound of the band that she goes into the loo, kind of cuts her hair, puts on sort of Susie of the Banshees makeup, and comes out and dances on the dance floor as if somehow punk would convert people instantly. So it is kind of, and Malcolm, all that kind of philosophizing, and kind of, you know, the whole idea is I'm theorizing, I'm orchestrating the whole thing. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I think some of the people were really good. I thought the girl who plays Chrissy Hynde, Sydney Chandler, is terrific. All the girls are terrific, actually. And also it struck me that actually it is a very unusual story, because in under 2 years, the Pistols, and it's not about records, it's entirely about the controversy, had so many extraordinary things happen. There was the whole stuff about the audience horror at their first gigs. There was the signing to A&M in front of Buckingham Palace. You know, there's the HMS Belfast scene and the arrest and Bill Grundy, God Save the Queen, hiring Sid Vicious, a bloke. I mean, I can remember all this really well because it was just around the time I was about to start working on The Enemy. Hiring Sid Vicious, a bloke who couldn't play. The US tour. Do you remember that when Malcolm sent them down to face the redneck South? Ronnie Biggs and then the death of Sid and Nancy. I mean, they are amazing. I couldn't really think of any other group who in that brief period of time, it was only about 18 months, had crammed in so much controversy.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
But the thing
No, nothing's been as fast since, has it?
No, not really. No, I mean, obviously, all big groups had big news stories, but they weren't of that kind of nature. They're mostly about statistical things, about chart successes and playing huge size venues or whatever. Theirs was all wall-to-wall controversy. Amazing. But the thing that the group makes you think about is that they're so utterly horrible to each other the entire time. And you think, how would they have had enough belief in the common cause to put up with that? And I thought it was quite interesting that once you see the story of the Pistols from Steve Jones' point of view, because the book's based on, the film's based on his book, you kind of have some insight into it, because he came from this really, really, really horrible background, didn't he? Kind of abused by his stepfather and kind of absolutely joyless, miserable life. He had 14 criminal convictions. He had a year in a remand home. And there's a bit in the movie, and I don't know whether it happened in real life, but I you can see there was a connection where Malcolm goes to testify on his behalf in court and gets him out of jail. So once Malcolm has said, I'm going to give you a chance, I'm going to be this kind of father figure you never had, you can understand why he would have pursued, what he would have believed in everything that Malcolm told him to do, and why they would have had the appetite. Also, being broke and working class, desperately keen to make the amounts of money they did, you know. And I could sort of understand why they had that kind of drive to succeed, why that overcome all them, they overcame all the internal misery. But the other thing I thought was amazing was Glenn Matlock. Is that Glenn Matlock, what a saint, this character. He comes out of this thing as completely saintly. Not only really sweet-natured, clearly the best songwriter, clearly the best musician, not that that mattered particularly, and then fired in the most horrible circumstances. And according to the movie, he then offers to give Sid Vicious bass lessons before that, which Sid Vicious tells him to fuck off. So you kind of think he comes out of it as being completely wonderful. And I thought it's good. I think it's really enjoyable. And it's interesting, I've noticed that the general feeling is everyone thought they were going to hate it. And they've just kind of, they find it's actually thoroughly entertaining. It's good.
The Word Podcast. Clearly, there is no plan.
Any other business? We're joined by Alex Gold. Where are you, Alex? You're in Kingston, aren't you?
I'm in swinging Kingston-on-Upon-Thames in the most harrowing travelodge I think I've ever had the pleasure to stay in.
It's the Bates Motel goes travelodge. It's
something astonishing. My recollection of Kingston from being here a few years ago is very idyllic. It's by the river, you know, it's kind of golden suburbia, but something's happened in the intervening years. Maybe because I left in the first place, who knows?
And you've upset delicate balance of the universe, Alex.
Then again, no disrespect, but when you see anything from the inside of a travelodge, doesn't that somehow taint the view?
No, don't get me wrong. I love a loge. I'm a massive loge fan. Yeah. It's.
Do you prefer the loge to the Premier Inn?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Really?
No, don't get me wrong. I like the fact the Premier Inn's got a guaranteed bath. That's definitely earns it points. Right. However, I find the shade of purple it dresses itself in a little bit stressful. I much prefer the Travelodge's soft blues. And in fact, they've just introduced these sleeper rooms. I'm not working for them, by the way, which you pay like £10 extra and you get a slightly comfier bed, a slightly nicer chair.
So what are they called? Sleep kind of rooms?
Super rooms.
Oh, super rooms. Oh,
yeah, okay. Like a proper super coffee machine. Needless to say, there's not one here at all. There's not anything here at all, really, apart from, you know, the very heady whiff of failure and discontent.
So that's where you are.
The overpowering stench, yes. Oh, my Lord.
So, Alex, I asked you, I don't know if you managed to do this. I said we ought to have a subdivision of our word in your attic. You know, all our hundreds of videos.
Oh, I've done it, actually.
Where we've talked to loads and loads of people over the last 2 years. I thought we had to have an honours board for those
who
people.
Are the ones that we've
who
done
are the ones
board?
Who
I think
who've
there's
done a
Sir
major
Bob Geldof, isn't yeah. there? There's Sir Tim Rice, and now obviously Sir Ian Rankin, which is great. But I think in terms of MBEs, we've done Dylan Jones as an MBE, but were there any others? I don't know.
Yep. Was that four altogether? It was. Yeah, there's four so far.
Yeah,
I
okay.
So
well, congratulations to all of them. And
absolutely.
Ian's got his knighthood, which forces me to ask the question. It's completely theoretical. If you were offered one, Mark Ellen, would you take it?
What, a knighthood? I think I'd probably... Absolutely absurd concept. I'm trying to think what for services to what. I don't know. I think I you see, most people say, "Well, I'd do it for the sake of the family."
Just give me a direct answer, Mark. Would you do it? Or would you?
I would. I think because why you wouldn't you?
So you wouldn't.
I wouldn't,
well,
tell
wouldn't
you, want
to
be referred to as whatever. You know, it's like seeing all the stuff in the papers today about the previous politicians at the church service yesterday, and it was kind of, you know, it's Gordon Brown, and it's Sir Tony Blair, Sir John Major, you know what I mean? Theresa May. I mean,
there are certain people. I was thinking this the other day when I was writing something about Paul McCartney, and then on the email it was referred to as Sir Paul McCartney, and I always think to myself, the idea of giving Paul McCartney a knighthood just seems utterly redundant. He's bloody Paul McCartney.
He's
from
Crybell. I know, it's the idea he should be taken great.
Yes, it's utterly pointless.
I know, it was a great
was
clip
a beat,
of Robert Smith.
There are only four people that applied to. Yeah. That is the greatest honour of our lifetime, isn't it? It doesn't need recognising with anything further. Yeah, and I feel a bit similar about prime ministers, really. You know, if you've been prime minister, you've risen to the top of your particular tree. However you've done it, that's what you've done. You sort of don't need anything further. It's like
no, but it's all about that people's involvement with charity, isn't it? Which is, I mean, what you could
well,
talk
it's
about
not,
Justin
it's
Hayward
not
and Bonnie Tyler. Oh, no, Bonnie Tyler and Justin Hayward who got honours.
Okay, can I tell you the other thing about it? Bonnie Tyler and, it's people represent certain parts of the United Kingdom. That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
No doubt
true.
They're looking for 10 Scots, 10 Welsh.
10 Welsh people, tick them off. Absolutely.
Yeah, tick them off. But anyway, you know, there's two things I thought about if I was offered a knighthood, which is clearly never going to happen. One thing that would have weighed most heavily in my decision is no longer the factor, is that my parents are no longer alive.
I know.
And if your parents are alive, you couldn't refuse.
You couldn't refuse it. No.
Because they would eventually get to know that you'd refused.
Yeah, and then
and they
one
would
big
feel
chance.
Slighted. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, you've given me, you've told me that you once got the greatest, I once almost had the greatest reason to show off in front of my people down the shopping centre, and you took it away from me. Parents do not forgive that kind of thing. The other thing is, my first thought would be, is Mark Ellen Gateman as well?
Sincerely, I hope he doesn't get one first. But I mean, you could.
My other thought would be, are you sure you don't mean Mark Ellen?
Yeah. How would you turn down the chance of eventually going? Wouldn't it be such fun to be there? Now, anybody who's ever been always has a great story to tell about the whole process of you know, how you the conversation that you have with the Queen or whichever dignitary it is, and how you mustn't attempt to continue it. And whether or not they say, have you come far and all that, you know, it's gripping, don't you think?
Yeah, can I ask a question which might be construed as a bit stupid, in that does knighthood get you any sort of tangible benefits? Does it get you like 10% extra off?
10% off at a Travelodge.
Yeah.
I think you'd probably get a restaurant table more easily.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised. Your secretary rings up on behalf of Sir Ian Rankin.
Do you get an extra 5% off the bill as well, or a free dessert?
I don't think it'll get you a percentage off the bill, but
refill
I think it might get you a restaurant table.
Okay,
and I don't know, a Wimbledon ticket possibly, that kind of thing.
I'd accept for Wimbledon ticket and a restaurant table, to be quite frank with you.
Yeah. But you know, I do think it's kind of pointless with Paul McCartney. It's
completely
Paul
pointless.
McCartney.
It's absurd. It's almost insulting.
Talking of Paul McCartney, June the 18th, We are marking his 80th birthday at in Holland Park in the salubrious auditorium provided by Opera Holland Park, which has the unique virtues of a tented roof that keeps any potential rain off, because it's not going to rain, but also it's open at the sides, so it can let the sunlight and the air in, can't it, Alex?
It's
lovely.
It's the most wonderful, wonderful park as well.
Yeah.
Fox wandering around, gorgeous old architecture, lovely flowers, and it's just the whole thing's ace, isn't it?
Yeah, and so that's the 18th, June the 18th, in the afternoon, starts around 2 and it'll be all over by 5. Our guests that afternoon include Danny Baker, Julia Rayside,
Jeff Lloyd. Great, we got Graham Gouldman of the 10cc.
And Andy Miller. So they're all going to be joining us. And so if you haven't already got your tickets, get on with it. Okay, what else have we got to talk about? Anything, Alex? What are you doing in the Travelodge? Have you got a gig coming up or anything like that?
I'm plotting my escape as soon as possible. That's what I'm doing.
You're knotting the sheets together, trying to get out of the window. Yeah. Back to the Shires.
With the small faces. With the small faces lot again. So I've gone, I've put down my Beatles hat and I've done my finest mod gear. And I'm a small face again for the weekend. Actually, we had Sandy Sargent, who was
Max's wife.
Yeah, last night.
That's right. It's so wonderful.
Yeah.
Did she like it?
She did. She loved it. She's seen it a couple of times, actually. She did. She did approve. It was nice to see, it's nice to see the ball and chain again. And
yeah, because you play the part of Mac, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And all that. Can they hear that outside?
Yeah.
The young Kingston.
Yeah. Poor people. More dissatisfied customers hurling bricks through the Travelodge window.
It's about as far from a cruise ship as it's possible to get.
Yeah, yeah.
So what, when you do your small faces act, what do you start with? What's your opening small faces on?
So for anybody who isn't aware, so this is a condensed version of the musical that we toured with and did a brief West End residency. So it's basically the same running order. So it kind of runs through the small faces of chronologically. We start with Rolling Over, which isn't really chronological, but we go right back to You Need Loving, which obviously Led Zeppelin appropriated. What You Gonna Do, Sha-la-la-la-lee. We go right through to Ichiki Park and Happiness Stan. And then we do a second set in this one of general 60s groovers from little known bands such as the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Who.
Which song?
It Helped Last Time. Tommy Tucker, High Heel Sneakers. That's a saucy one. Yeah.
Do you do them as if it's the Small Faces cover version? Is that how you do it?
No, we don't
sing it in character.
We break the fourth wall for that.
And
we do that just as ourselves, I suppose. I'm still in mod gear, but I switched from keys. I hadn't touched the keyboard in 6 months, and I have to play two of them at the same time to be Mac. So yesterday was a little bit jazz, but that's the Small Faces are about, right?
What is the Small Faces signature song?
HQ Park, 100%.
It is it?
Because it's not Lazy Sunday?
No, because it's HQ Park's the one everybody knows. Like, the thing which I found
it's not
really,
all or nothing.
I don't think
that number one record?
It was. It was their first number one. But I think Ichiki Park is the one that's endured. I mean, the surprising thing for me when I first got cast, 4 years ago, is that the Small Faces have always been really important to me, because all the bands that I really loved, every single one of them, cited them as an influence. So in my world, they were always prevalent. They were always there, always present somehow. But to the general public, they're not really well known at all. And this really kind of surprised me, because I thought they were, the part of the general kind of populace's sort of line of information. But nobody really knows them if they're not really into music. But everybody does know HQ Park. So it's got to be their signature, really, I think.
So Mark and I were talking about signature tunes earlier this week, because I'm reading a fantastic biography of Bob Hope, which contains all kinds of revelations.
Oh, Mark Ellen's disappeared.
Oh, well, it can't be bad. Mark Ellen's disappeared.
Where's he gone?
I'm just going to keep talking until he rejoins us. Shall I do that? Is that the best policy? So Bob Hope, early on in his career at Vaudeville, was part of an act, two guys kind of dancing, singing and dancing and telling jokes act. And their big breakthrough was when they got a six-month residency dancing with a pair of Siamese twins.
What?
Yes. 6 months. Dancing with a pair of Siamese twins.
Hashtag things that wouldn't happen in 2022.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so the reason that we're talking about the whole business of signature tunes is that Bob Hope's was Thanks for the Memory, which he was first introduced to when he was given it to sing in a movie in 1938. And the reason they gave it to him to sing was he was always very good at what they call list songs. So he wasn't particularly a singer, but he could remember lyrics. And, you know, so you'd always have these songs that, you know, like Cole Porter's You're the Tops or whatever. You're the Tops, You're the Colosseum, You're the Louvre Museum, You're the, you know, loads and loads of examples. And Thanks for the Memory was a bit like that. So he started singing this in 1938. It was so big, so quickly, that they made a movie just called Thanks for the Memory. And he carried on being his signature tune until he died in the 21st century. That's a long time with the signature tune.
It is, yeah.
And we were just thinking, what are the signature tunes? What are the songs that kind of bind the audience and the performer? You know, obviously Frank Sinatra, My Way, is kind of that, isn't it? You know, that, hello, Mark Ellen's back. He's back in the room.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
We kept talking. I kept talking.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know what happened. So, suddenly just flicked out. So we're back.
Yeah. You're back. We're talking about sing tunes. And I've told Alex about the Bob Hope, Thanks for the Memory. And we're just trying to think of other signature tunes that have that, where the tune kind of bonds the audience and the performer. History. So My Way is a classic.
My Way's good.
Queen would be good. Bohemian Rhapsody, surely.
Except
no, not really. We Are the Champions and I Will Survive. I think it's things about...
It's an I song, very often.
We Are.
Yeah, okay.
I'll tell you a really good example of that, actually, which I think is... I mean, it's nowhere near on that kind of level, but I think it's Ever Fallen in Love with Someone.
Buzzcocks.
Because that's one of those songs where everybody looked at that and thought, I've had that experience, you know, and everyone kind of nods approvingly at the concept of having ever fallen in love. I think that's a great one. There was a band in about 1991 called Airhead. I can remember when I was just started working.
What a good record.
Yeah, do you remember that? I was working.
Funny how the girls you fall in love with never fancy you. Funny how the ones you don't do.
Very good. That's right.
I used to play it on the radio all the time. It's a brilliant record.
It's a really, really good record. And it's just one of those things that I can remember it really well. I was on Select at the time. It was the kind of indie time. And absolutely everybody connected with that. Because that's a universal experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
Those are the songs that...
things like Oasis, presumably Live Forever is the Oasis anthem.
Yeah.
Gosh, I would suggest I'd suggest it's probably Don't Look Back in Anger. That's the one whip out of your back pocket in any establishment in the UK, and immediately people, without even realising it, they'll have their shirt off and be really rolling it around their head.
But it's kind of songs where people feel that they're singing about themselves.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think that's just an anthem. I think kind of We Are the Champions, okay. I Will Survive. I think that's about... all been through this experience, you know, and we all know what it's like, and we're taking a great deal of strength from the fact that this community have all felt the same way.
Maybe it is.
I think that's different
from
an anthem. An anthem is just waving a flag or a cigarette lighter, you know, just kind of joining in. No, I think they're things that make you feel connected, and I think Born to Run, Dave. We've talked about
Born to Run is one.
Tramps Like Us, Tramps Like Us. It's that idea that we. We do this together. You know, all of us have been through this.
Yeah, we've all been to Bruce Springsteen shows where you look around, there's people in the 60s and 70s or whatever. So, you know, driven here in a company car, Yeah. Singing about tramps like
loosen their ties, yeah. Reattach their ties a headband. torn the sleeves off their jacket. Tramps like us. No. I think it's a real difference. But yeah, that's a great song. That thanks for the memory is amazing. And it's still 1938, wasn't it?
1938, right? and he sang it for the rest of his life. It's absolutely,
yeah, because there were a lot of songs that you know, summertime's from around then. My Baby Just Cares for Me, Blue Moon, but they don't have the same kind. They're just great songs. They're not connective, are they?
No. So if anybody's got any suggestions for further ones, let us know.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.